It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Governor Evers recently unveiled his plan to help struggling dairy farmers. We'll look at what he's proposing and how it might affect Wisconsin's dairy industry. First, having friends over for dinner can be a super fun way to catch up and share a meal. But when the time comes to put it all together, you might feel a little bit stressed out. Well, you don't need to be overwhelmed. Our next guest joins us to share some ideas and recipes that take the anxiety out of making a meal for friends. Allison Roman is a chef, columnist, and cookbook author. Her latest book is Nothing Fancy, Unfussy Food for Having People Over. Allison, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Your book is chock full of recipes, Allison, but a key thing here is it's also an attitude, a mindset. Can you talk about the having people over mindset you're trying to help us find?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you see that. I definitely view it as a state of mind as well. I think that it's, for me, sort of the difference between entertaining and having people over. And for me, entertaining feels really stressful and scary and fussy and uptight, all things that I am extremely allergic to. But having people over just kind of just makes you feel a bit more relaxed. It makes you feel kind of like, oh, I can do that. That's different. And I think that, you know, embracing that from the beginning is going to help you no matter what it is that you're cooking.
Yeah, entertaining sounds like, okay, you got to, whatever, iron the doilies and polish the candelabra, or buy doilies in a candelabra, I don't know. you don't think it has to be a production, right?
No, I don't. I think that it can be as fussy or, you know, opulent as you want it to be, or if it just means like ordering pizza and then making a really good salad to go with that, I feel like that's also having people over.
And you've got some advice in your book, again, even before you get to the recipes. One of those is ask for help, even with the little stuff. Why do you think it's hard for us when we're having people over to say, hey, can you do this one little thing that's part of the deal?
Honestly, I think it all sort of boils down to our need to feel perfect and in control of the situation at all times, kind of in every facet of our life. But there's sort of something that happens when you invite people into your home that you want to make sure that, like, every corner is well vacuumed and that all your plates match and that whoever's over is going to see this version of your life that you want it to be, right? That nothing ever goes wrong, that everything's clean and you have plenty of time for everything. But I think there's something really nice about being a little bit more vulnerable and kind of just letting people see what your life is really like and understand that we're all just doing the best we can. And, you know, reframing that, what it means to invite people into your home, is not a scary thing, but as just an extension of building relationships and, you know, making better connections.
And I love you. You kind of say we should pick our battles. And part of how that plays out is, hey, if you want to make it fancy, do not a fancy main course and fancy hors d'oeuvres and fancy this and that. Do one thing that's fancy and keep everything else super simple.
Yeah, it's kind of like how I approach my wardrobe, right? I'm not going to wear head to toe extremely expensive things. I may buy one nice, you know, pair of shoes or a bag, but the rest of it's going to probably be like, you know, a Hanes t-shirt and Levi's. And I think that there's something in that mixing and matching of just, you know, if you're going to spend the time, if you're going to spend the money, if you're going to spend the effort, do it on like a really beautiful prime rib or some delicious wine or like a fancy cake or something. And then everything else can just kind of accompany that and support that.
And another thing you encourage is forget the main course. Have a meal that's snacks and side dishes and things like that. And honestly, if I'm eating, you know, if I'm just making food for myself, I love to eat that way. Why not share that with other people?
Yeah. I mean, snacks for dinner is probably my favorite meal. And people say, what's your favorite thing? It's, you know, snacks as a general category. I think that, you know, we have this sort of, still this like, I think very antiquated meat and three and like, you know, meat, starch, potato, meat, vegetable, potatoes type of mentality when we think of how to build a meal. But I think a meal of, you know, a roasted vegetable side dish and a bowl of grains and a salad and then, you know, cheese to start is awesome and a really filling and, you know, great way to have dinner. I promise you, nobody will be hungry.
Allison Roman is with us. Her new book is Nothing Fancy, Unfussy Food for Having People Over. We've got some recipes Allison shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's get to one of those recipes. This is something, it sounds like something that your friends expect you to make, this dip. Labneh, am I saying that right? With sizzled scallions and chili, in parentheses, almost ranch. Tell us about this one.
Yeah. Yeah, labneh is, I think, the way that I said, or labneh, depending on where it's coming from. But basically, this is like my highbrow version of ranch dressing. And this is something that I crave all the time. You know, some version of like a sour cream and onion dip or ranch or just that creaminess with, you know, kind of a garlicky and then lemony flavor. And to me, this is the best of those worlds, except I take scallions and I sizzle them in some olive oil and I add chili flake and I cook that down into this bright, beautiful orange chili oil with like the scallions kind of melted into it. And then I swirl that over the top of really lemony labneh. And if you can't find labneh, which is not everywhere these days, but you can use sour cream and you can use full fat Greek yogurt. Both work really well.
And this is, we could use this anywhere where we might use ranch dressing, which is just about anywhere these days, right?
Yeah, it's a bit thicker. So I definitely see it as more of a dip than a dressing. But if you were to thin it out, it could definitely be dressing worthy. But it's, you know, the kind of thing that I set out in the bowl for snack time and you can dip vegetables into it or, you know, flatbreads or crackers. But it's also really good, you know, spooned under roasted vegetables or eaten with a roast chicken.
Now, Allison, in this recipe, and I think at least one more, you introduced me to a culinary term I'd never heard before, frizzled. What is frizzled?
You know, frizzled is like not quite crispy. It's a bit closer to sizzled, but there is browning. It's not caramelized. You know, I think of something as frizzled, I think of it more as a textural thing. So the one I think you're speaking of is the frizzled chickpeas.
Yeah.
And chickpeas, people are obsessed with getting crispy, which is actually quite hard because there's so much water in them. And unless you're roasting them for a very long time or you're deep frying them, it's pretty challenging to get them crispy. But frizzled is something anyone can do and as long as you have enough olive oil. And I kind of take that same approach to the scallions. They're not really fried and they don't get crispy, but they are frizzled. They're like, you know, a little frazzly crispy around the edges maybe, but still pretty tender.
That is how my attempts at fried, you know, crispy chickpeas have come out. I guess I will embrace that. I always hit a point where I give up on crispy and just go with, I guess, frizzled.
Yeah, don't fight it. Frizzled is great. Love a frizzled anything.
Now, here's another dish. It's a side. Now, there's already a stain on the copy of the cookbook here because our producer, Jay Carlisle Larson, made this one at home. Creamy cauliflower and onion gratin. Tell us about this one.
Oh,
it looks
yeah.
really good, and I'm getting good reports from JC.
It is fantastic. It's basically like a mac and cheese, but with cauliflower. And it's really simple. There's no technique, really. You're just layering in raw cauliflower, onion, salt and pepper, into a baking dish or a cake pan or kind of any vessel that has, you know, sides to it. And you're covering it with cream. There's some Gruyere cheese or I think white cheddar. I forget. You could use either. plenty of salt and pepper. And then you cover the top with a sesame breadcrumb if you want. It's also really great without the breadcrumbs. I wanted there to be sort of a gluten-free or, you know, wheat-free alternative to a gratin, which tends to always include flour and a bechamel or breadcrumbs as a topping. And this one is really just cauliflower that you cook in cream in the oven. So as the cauliflower cooks in the cream, it becomes super, super tender, almost custardy. And the cream cooks down and evaporates and gets really decadent and rich. And to me, and there's not a better side dish.
And you write that there's this trend out there to replace pasta with vegetable replacement things. And you are generally against that trend. But in this case, you like it.
Well, I say this is not that because I don't want anyone to think that I would ever think that you should not eat pasta or eat a vegetable in favor of a pasta or vice versa. I think that they're both their own beautiful things and should be enjoyed separately. But this is more like, you know, taking a piece of cauliflower, which is not the sexiest vegetable. It's pretty mild, you know, it doesn't have a ton of flavor, especially when just, you know, steamed or anything like that. But when you cook it in a ton of heavy cream and Parmesan or Gruyere or cheddar, then I think it takes on an entirely different role.
Is there a food that doesn't get good when you cook in a ton of heavy cream or Gruyere or anything like that?
I can't think of one, honestly.
We're talking to Allison Roman, chef, columnist, and cookbook author. We're talking about her new book. It's called Nothing Fancy, Unfussy Food for Having People Over. She's with us to talk about sharing a meal with friends without getting overwhelmed. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you go into having people over for a meal with this attitude? Doesn't have to be fancy. The house doesn't have to be completely clean. You don't need a five-course meal with a lot of effort in each one. What kind of things do you like to serve? What is your go-to, maybe quick and easy thing for if people are coming over on a work day say. Or if you have a question for Allison, you need some recommendations, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And remember, we've got some recipes from Allison over at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our Food Friday conversation with Allison Roman, chef, columnist, and cookbook author. Her latest book is Nothing Fancy, Unfussy Food for Having People Over. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like having people over for meals? How big a production do you put into it? Do you get stressed out, excited, both? Are there some go-to things that, you know, are big crowd pleasers that come out pretty easy for you? Or would you do it more, but you think it's going to be too much work? Maybe you need some encouragement, a pep talk from Allison. Or maybe you've got a pep talk of your own for having people over. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Allison, before we get back to recipes, back to the attitude side of things, I'll say sometimes I may be reluctant to have that dinner get together because of the work it entails. Do you worry that, you know, the mindset that we have to do something cool and fancy every time is just keeping us from doing it at all?
Oh, constantly. Yeah. I think people are always looking to kind of, you know, put a spin on something. And like, you know what's really good? A regular chicken that is seasoned with salt and pepper and put in the oven. Like, I don't need to spin that at all. And I think that, you know, kind of putting that pressure to always do something different or unique or crazy is going to often be more trouble than it's worth, in my opinion, and not necessarily delicious than something that feels just sort of classic and comforting. And if that's what you like, then there shouldn't be the pressure to make yourself into someone you're not.
Now, I'm just an ordinary Joe radio host. People don't expect too much from my cooking. As somebody who works in food and writes books about food, do you feel like more pressure than the rest of us might? People are looking at you like, she better come up with something good.
Yeah, actually, somebody just asked me on Twitter if I had a spin on a chicken pot pie, and they brought up a recipe that I had published that was just a pretty straightforward skillet chicken pot pie. And I said, you know, I do love to make things interesting and add a twist here and there occasionally with certain things, especially like vegetables or chicken thighs, you know, for like a skillet dinner. But if I'm going classic, if I'm making a chicken pot pie, I just want that to be the best version of a chicken pot pie. I want it to be like textbook, you know, archetype chicken pot pie.
Now, you mentioned roasting that chicken a little while ago. Another recipe you shared with us is a slow roasted oregano chicken with buttered tomatoes. So, I don't know. In my head, roasting a chicken's a big deal, is it?
It's really not a big deal. I feel like, you know, if you have an oven and a chicken, you can make a roast chicken.
That's all it takes. What is special about this one, the slow roasted oregano chicken?
For me, there's a few things that make this one special. One, I'm employing sort of this low and slow technique, which almost mimics like the rotisserie style where you're cooking it over a long period of time. And what you get there is the skin, it doesn't get crispy, but it does sort of, it renders the fat underneath the skin in a way that you don't get when cooking the chicken at a higher temperature. And the end result is like kind of this really sticky, deeply savory, very thin layer of skin on the top of the chicken. And the meat is just impossibly tender and nothing is overcooked. The breast is really juicy and the thighs and the legs are so tender that you can just literally pull the bone out. And the second thing that makes this chicken so good are the tomatoes that get roasted alongside of it. Because as that fat cooks from the chicken, those tomatoes then get slow cooked in that chicken fat, which is unbelievably delicious. And of course, because I feel like in this particular instance, you can't really have too much of a good thing. There are a few little pats of butter scattered on those tomatoes before it goes into the oven. So the stuff, the little sauciness at the bottom of the whatever you're using, a roasting pan or a baking dish, it's just the most delicious, tangy, savory sort of juices that you've ever possibly had. And so I like to serve it over really thick cut toast. If you're not into toast or bread, you can always leave it out. But this is probably the chicken that I roast more frequently than any other chicken. And just because they're using tomatoes doesn't mean you have to make it in the summer, because the way that they're cooked, they are pretty much foolproof no matter what kind of tomato you're using any time of year. So I think it's like a secret winter dish where you're just wishing to see a vegetable and just so tired of potatoes. You're like, well, I can have tomatoes for dinner tonight, but as long as they're slow cooked in chicken fat.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Karen on the line in Rice Lake. Karen, hi.
Hi. I like to make couscous when I have guests coming over because it's quick and easy, and I can make the stew ahead, and then if I don't know what time the people are arriving, I just make the couscous when the people pull in the driveway, and it's no more difficult than making stovetop stuffing. You just boil the water, put the couscous in, take it off the burner, and wait 5 minutes, and then fluff it.
That's fantastic, Karen. I like that kind of premeditation there, Allison. She knows that she can have this together really quickly.
That's correct. I'm a big fan of every type of dish that requires that little attention.
Great, Karen. Thanks for that call. And Allison, make a point. Hey, if you're worried about you've got five different things, they all need to be hot. Well, maybe don't plan that way. Have one thing you want to keep hot, and everything else is stuff that you don't have to worry about the temperature for.
Yeah, I feel like people are so obsessed with having hot food on the table at all times. And you know what? Honestly, things aren't hot. Nothing has to be hot. I feel like as soon as it gets to the table, even if it is hot, guess what? In 5 minutes, it's not going to be hot anymore. So don't worry about it. I think that most things served at room temperature, which is not exactly a sexy term, is actually really delicious.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Michael now with us in Madison. Michael, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Michael?
Good. Hey, I was just going to talk about, I'm having about 12 people over this weekend, which is more than I'm generally used to. So my wife and I decided to have everybody make their own pizzas in a cast iron skillet on the stove. And all you got to do is pop it under the broiler for about 4 minutes and everybody will be fed and happy in less than an hour.
That sounds fantastic. And you're going to have just a range of toppings people can choose from, Michael?
Yeah, a range of toppings. You just build it all right in the cast iron skillet. And whenever it's ready, you just toss it under the broiler for a couple minutes and it's done. Everybody gets to try each other's creations, and it's kind of a fun thing we like to do when friends come over.
That sounds cool. And, Michael, not to get you into controversy here, are you going to have pineapple and ham as an option?
I have not picked up the pineapple and ham, though. Thanks for giving me the good idea.
Excellent, Michael. Thanks for that. Allison, that's a great idea. Do you have any other thoughts on, you know, a crowd participation for people coming over, things like Michael's doing?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a control freak, so that would be actually my worst nightmare. But I feel like, you know, having the sort of baked potato bar, which I write about, or a DIY pizza night are really good ideas because I can control certain things in that equation. Like I can make the crust and I can procure the toppings and make sure that any combination of them is going to turn out really well. So also, I feel like when people come over and it is the sort of that pizza night, I'm like, no, you can do it. Just put it on the sheet pan, put it in the oven. They look at me like I'm crazy. But it is also like a de facto cooking lesson, I guess, and just making people feel more confident when they come over that they can actually do something like that as well. But I'm a big fan of the like topping bar concept. So be that a potato or a pizza, I think it's great.
Michael, thanks for that call. It's Food Friday. We're talking to Allison Roman. Her new book is Nothing Fancy, Unfussy Food for Having People Over. We got an email from Pat who says, Julia Child says you should said you should present your food with no explanations or apologies to your guests. Pat writes, I've really tried to remember this and think about how we're honoring our friends with dinner and they want us serving it to them happy. And you, that's another point I didn't bring up earlier. You say you agree with that idea. Don't apologize.
Yeah, never apologize, just as a blanket statement for life. No, just kidding. yeah, I think that, you know, things are not always going to go according to plan. And, you know, maybe something took longer than you thought, or maybe the store didn't have cilantro, so you had to use parsley, or the chicken didn't get as brown as you had hoped. But if your mood changes and they sense that you're stressed out or unhappy, then I think that that changes the vibe of the entire room and the entire table. So I completely agree with that. And putting your best and most excited face forward and embracing the imperfections as they arise is the best way to keep the vibe fun and loose and casual.
And we also heard, we got a note from Grant who says, Stratas are a favorite of mine. Do you have a favorite Strata you like to bake, Allison?
You know, I don't. I'm sure Grant could give me a tip or two. It's typically not something that I make ever. So I've had them for breakfast before, but never would have thought to make one for dinner.
Yeah, it sounds like I make bread pudding a lot, and it seems to be like, well, Strad is just bread pudding, but, you know, savory instead of sweet, but I haven't tried it myself either. So yeah, Grant, we're going to expect a recipe from you. Send one in quickly, please. And then I want to, you know, we're toward the end of our meal here, Allison, so let's get to a dessert. You shared one that you say kind of functions like a Pop-Tart and looks like a pepperoni pizza, but it's still really good. Tell us about it's a sour cherry and sesame galette.
Yeah, and this is another one of those sort of hidden winter treats because I think there's nothing wrong with using frozen sour cherries in something like this. In fact, I think that they can sometimes be better and easier to find than fresh sour cherries, depending on where you live. But it's also really flexible and you can use other fruit in this galette. But instead of making, you know, those open face galettes, which are delicious, but sometimes can be really juicy or too runny, and there's, you know, an improper crust to fruit ratio, I like to make a double crust galette. And someone asked me, what's the difference between a double crust galette and a pie? The difference being that you're not using a pie dish for this. So it is flatter and it is more pizza looking. And I realized after I looked at the photograph that it looks like a big pepperoni pizza, but I think that's funny. So I'm into it. But it's really nice because you can just slice it up and share it with people. And if it doesn't get all eaten at night, it makes a fantastic breakfast.
That's another one we have at WPR.org/Food Friday. In our last minute or so, Allison, leave us with a pep talk to get out and try having people over maybe as soon as this weekend.
I think that, you know, if you want to spend time with your friends and you need to eat dinner, obviously, I think that having people over and inviting them to your home is such a better experience than trying to make a reservation at a restaurant where you're stuck next to the same person the whole time and you don't know how the food's going to be and someone's serving you. It changes the dynamic entirely. And I think that you're inherently feeling a bit more close to someone and the conversations get better and the food could potentially be exactly what you want it to be if you just have them over to your home.
Fantastic. Allison, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Allison Roman, chef, columnist, and cookbook author. We've been talking about her latest book. It's called Nothing Fancy, Unfussy Food for Having People Over. We've got a few of the recipes she shared with us. You can find them and make them if you'd like. They're at WPR.org/Food Friday.